Whipple Nation, and welcome to the 37th episode of the Huntington Whipple League podcast. We're going to be recapping today our two new inductees into the League Hall of Fame. So we're up to seven people in the Hall of Fame now, and with me, it's not a ghost. It's Greg Sauer. It's be the first time he's been on the show in several episodes. How you doing, Greg?
It's been a while. Doing good. Glad to be back. Glad to be talking Whipple.
Glad you're not dead. All right. So, well, Greg, it's great to have you back on the show here. So, our last episode, we sort of did a much delayed and much deserved recap of the 2018 class and did a very thorough deep dive with the five players that made it onto the ballot and interviewed each one of them and got their, you know, hypothetical acceptance speeches. So, we're not going to be interviewing either of the people who were inducted, because it was more than enough the last episode. So we really just want to recap the people that were in, the people that were nominated, and kind of do some speculation of what the future may hold for that particular institution. So just as a recap, the two players that got the most votes and were admitted into the Hall of Fame this year in 2021 were Jeremy Ray and Andrew Westcott. There were five players that were on the ballot altogether. We've got Jeremy Ray and Andrew Westcott, obviously, but we also had Anthony Stidham, Ryan Pritt, and Bryce Clark. And we normally only have, per the regulations and rules for the Hall of Fame, the ballot's only supposed to be four players, but there was a two-way tie for the fourth spot, and we just could not break it, so we put all five on the ballot. We did stick with the regulation of electing two win, though, so something for that. So,
yeah, I think they all deserve to be all good players, all contributed a lot. So,
yeah, I mean, these are all, even though only two got in, these other three are assuredly going to be in the Hall of Fame at some point, probably in the very near future. I didn't vote on the first ballot, obviously. I wasn't on the committee. I didn't even realize there was a ballot or a Hall of Fame or anything until it kind of got sprung on us. So before this election, I'd only participated in one, and there was still some, in the cosmic space of our league, there was still some gigantic planets and star system. We had Drew McClanahan, we had Patrick Rail, Jeremy Litton, Jeremy Ray, and a lot of these just gigantic stars and contributors and pillars of the league. And as much as I wish I could say it was difficult on that ballot for me to vote, it was not. It was obvious to me who I was going to vote for on that. But this ballot got me, Greg. I'm going to be honest with you. This was a really tough ballot. All of them, in their own right, they have contributed to this league. They have their talents on the field, some more than others. And they're all really good dudes and good friends of mine. And it was rough. There was no... I guess Jeremy Ray is really the only one I would consider sort of a shoe-in. Just like, well, this guy, he's done it all, right? So, but everybody else, I mean, you have Andrew Westcott. He's won two championships himself, one with Jeremy, one without. Anthony Stidham, he is a guy who's... I can't think of a more humbling beginning for a player than coming in and just getting housed every week, turning it around, being on good teams, performing on the field and off, and helping run the league, and then taking over the equipment. I mean, what more can you ask of someone coming in and getting their ass whipped week in, week out on a horrible team?
No, yeah. Sometimes I like to call him Greg Jr.
Yeah, I mean,
I did it first. I was the whipping boy. I was the equipment guy. You know,
no one else other than Anthony would have taken root in the way that he did there. He just had the right stuff, and, you know, I was proud to see him out.
And like you said, he performed well on the field. He's very humble. He would never admit it.
Yeah. So. And then you got Ryan Pritt, and, geez, I mean, this guy, he played in three seasons. He was on the best team every time.
He's got two championships, too.
Yeah, you know, there's some people that are on good teams, and there's people that are on teams and they're good because they're on them. Ryan Pritt is the latter. Cannot make that more clear. Is there more star power, you know, that kind of outshines him, either because of, you know, either talent, not necessarily that he possesses, like on the mound and things, or cockiness, and, you know, he's a quiet player. He lets his bat and his hands do the talking. He does chirp a little bit, but he's someone that is very focused on the game and is about the win. Anything else is secondary. So he's a guy that comes to the field to win, and he gets results. And you look at his career, and you will see that. So Ryan Pritt, you know, he's played with people like Andrew Westcott, Jeremy Ray, Matt Gordon, Drew McClanahan, and so many others, but he's still someone that kind of rises up in this conversation. I know he was someone that was mentioned on the ballot before this as well. So he is someone that has been among one of the first players to kind of be mentioned to put on this ballot, and I was glad to finally see him officially
on the ballot here. I think the two things that hold him back are longevity of career, you know, the three seasons, and he was never on a bad team.
Right. It's hard to stand out.
He was always surrounded by talent. Not to say he's not talented.
I agree.
But he was always surrounded by talent because he makes people play better.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. I mean, stars shine brightest in the absence of space, right? So, you know, no one can tell you one of the stars in the, you know, some of these clusters, but the ones that stand out and are bright and are so far away from everything else, it's easier to stand out. So, I mean, there's tons of star players that have been on middling teams, or they've been on a team where there's another good player. But when you're on a team that's just lights out top to bottom of the lineup, really hard to stand out sometimes. And that's through no fault of his own. I mean, you look at when he is put on the mound, he delivers. When he is up to bat, he is clutch. And he has a very high baseball IQ, which translates most times to a high whiffle ball IQ. And he's a prime example of that and how successful that can be. So his time will come, just as it will for Anthony in time, I'm sure. But kind of moving on to the other guy who is on the ballot, we've got Bryce Clark. Now, this is a phenom that has come to our league and played in the final three seasons. I don't think he missed hardly a game. He was a number two draft pick in 2017. He is a guy that...
Yeah, go Thunder Ducks.
Yeah, he thrives in every single whiffle environment you put him in. And he's a chameleon on Platt. He's not just good in Huntington Whiffle League. He's good in Maw. He's good in United Whiffle. He's good in Texas. I don't know if they play wiffle ball underwater on the moon, but I bet he'd be good at it. So, I mean, it's just he's a guy that has natural talent. And it's not like he's 21 years old. He's 27, 28 years old. This is, you know, you look at people like Farkas and Harley and a lot of these people that have come from different leagues, at least in the NWA. That's where my experience lies. They're really kind of in their golden years in their upper 20s, and Bryce is just getting started. But I think he will eventually hit that wall. But I think that he is more trained and disciplined with what he does than Jeremy Ray did, because he hit that wall, and he hit that wall hard. And then there was a lot of adaptation that come at that point. So Jeremy Ray is sort of like the John Smoltz of the Huntington Whiffle League. You know, if you don't know who John Smoltz is, then
if you don't, then just quit listening now.
Yeah, because if you're not down with 90s baseball, then you'll not understand what I'm talking about a lot of the time if I'm talking wiffle ball. So John Smoltz was a starting pitcher between Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine in the 1990s Braves lineup. He had to have Tommy John surgery. He came back as a closer and had like the highlight of his career into his 40s. So that's kind of Jeremy Ray at that point, but instead of him making a lot of the changes, it just happened to be that the league was making a lot of changes that he could thrive in. But Bryce Clark is an absolute force on the mound, and he can hit the ball. He can command a team. He's the five-tool player. And, you know, we've had some great players, and we've had some five-tool players, but Bryce Clark, when you just break it down to raw talent, I don't know if there's a better wiffle ball player that's ever come out of this state. In my opinion,
I would have to agree with you. I think a lot of why he's not necessarily up there in the Hall of Fame right now is a lot of the guys voting, first off, never played with him, never played against him, never played with him, never even got to see him play the game. So I think he's kind of lower on people's list, but definitely a guy who, if we keep voting year after year, I mean, a year or two from now, we'll be having this conversation about him making it into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, like I've said before, Bryce's career is just beginning. Regardless of what happens with West Virginia Wiffleball into the future, this is a guy that, if there's a tournament going on east of the Mississippi, he's there. He does not miss opportunities.
I mean, actually, he doesn't care where it is. Yeah. He was just, what, in Vegas playing?
Yeah, and, you know, he goes everywhere. And the HWO needed Bryce in 2013, 2014, 2015. Can you imagine how that could have been a difference maker if he would have been on our roster in 2014 at the NCAA tournament, or if he would have been on our roster in the 2016 regionals? If we had someone that's just a lights out player like that and could just turn it on, and
it speaks to his skill level that he doesn't care who he plays with.
Yeah, I've seen him play on bad teams and dominant teams.
He would have joined the plain white teams.
Yeah, and he can turn it around. You know, he can turn it around. I mean. I have seen him when he's not playing with the Mothman, basically, and he is a momentum maker. So I really can't say enough about his prowess on the field. And then not only that, he was a contributor. He was on the organizing committee the final year of the league, and he was key in promoting and had a lot of fresh ideas that he brought to the table. So I'll count Bryce out. I know he's a younger guy. He did not play with a lot of the old guys, people part of the old guard here. Played in 2013, 2014, 2015. You know, they walked uphill both ways in the snow to games and things like that. But
we did.
Yeah, but the thing is more and both people that got elected in this year, they have played with Bryce, and there are people that are already in the Hall of Fame and on the committee that have a say in that have played with Bryce. So don't count it out. I'm saying by 2023, there's no way Bryce Clark is not in this Hall of Fame. My prediction. But as far as like Stidham and Pritt, we'll kind of expand on that a little bit later. But I want to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be expanding on the two guys that did make it into the Hall of Fame. We've been doing an awful lot of talking about the guys who didn't. But let's shine the spotlight on the guys that did get it in when we come back. And we're back. Greg, you know, we've kind of dilly-dallied long enough. Let's get down to business. Let's talk about the two guys who actually got into the Hall of Fame. So we're now up to seven people. So let's talk about number six inducted here. We have Jeremy Ray. I'll let you take the lead here. So, I mean, spill. You know, why was he elected? What got him here? You weren't in the last episode, so I know you probably have a lot to say, and you're probably chomping at the bit, so get after it.
As much as it pains me to admit this, and I hope you cut this out.
I won't.
Probably the player that our league has seen from top to bottom.
The best player.
Hitting, you know, he was five-star his entire career.
Yeah.
There wasn't really a point in his career that you were like, this guy's washed up, and... Or, man, he made a ton of mistakes this week or that week.
Yeah.
So,
now he was top to bottom, as a day
I have
long.
To say, honestly, best player in the league.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of people probably from the outside looking in who don't know all the fables and lore and background and, you know, the history of our league, they were probably, you know, pounding their desks, and we're like, why is Jeremy Ray not in the Hall of Fame already? And, you know, it also begs the question of, we started the Hall of Fame in 2017, we did again in 2018, and then the league went on hiatus. 2019, no Hall of Fame. 2020, no Hall of Fame. 2021, finally Hall of Fame. We're looking at someone, we can say without a doubt, not just by process of elimination because he got elected this time, but 2019, he would have been in the Hall of Fame. And we'd be having a completely different discussion right now. If anything, it would have made more sense to continue doing the Hall of Fame. But that, due to the burnout, that would involve doing something regarding wiffle ball, which that was not going to happen. So I agree.
We needed the break.
I agree that probably you and I both are the only two people that have played in every single season of the league, from the first pitch to the last, we've seen the best that this area has to offer in every style of play. And we have seen Jeremy play fast pitch. We have seen him play slow pitch. We have seen him play medium. We have seen him pitch from 45 feet. We've seen him pitch from 48 feet. We've seen him playing for shits and giggles in the All-Star game. We've seen him play in the National Wiffle League Association All-Star game and on the big stage nationally, I think over 4 or 5 years. This is a guy who does not fuck around. He jokes around, but when it comes to his performance, there are no wild pitches for effect. There's no, you know, check swings just to be funny. He is someone that the jokes stop as soon as he touches the ball or the bat, and that's it. And he is someone that in 2014, I think he sort of was like Ryan Pritt in the fact that, like, my God, we had these stars that were playing in our league. And, you know, he made the team, but I'll be honest, I was the manager of that team. He was not, we picked 8 people, he was not my top 4. And that pains me to say now, it's obvious now that was a mistake, but he was sort of an unproven pitcher until the championship happened, which the team for Nationals had already been picked. He got so good over the year after the All-Star break, and then through the playoffs, hands down. I mean, I know that Drew McClanahan won Cy Whiffle, and he garnered all the attention, but I recently watched the 2014 HWL game. It's on YouTube. And my God, the performance, you know, he played against 2 aces. The Honey Badgers had Paul Hessen and Jacob Fisher, who both were at the top of their games as well. And he hung in there with both of them for 9 innings. Regulation's 5. So, I mean, he basically pitched 2 games back to back to back, and then one got away from him. So, I mean, and then we watched him basically bail us out in Nationals, Greg. So Drew was struggling because the weather was not cooperating. And then, you know, the pitching distance was different. And then rotation rules really limited our ability. You know, Nick Capra was kind of our go-to for a while. Jacob Fisher as well. Jeremy Ray. And less celebrated, Steven Atkins came up. And then Jeremy Ray became our workhorse. We pitched him every inning we could. And that's how we got as far as we did. And then that was the move. Every NAA team we sent after that. Doesn't matter if we played in a tournament just for kicks. He was the ace. And that's where he belonged. And, I mean, it's just...
Yeah, he was the number one pick when we had the draft.
Yeah. And very deservedly so. I think we had a draft this year. Still number one pick. You know, he can't pitch as fast as he used to, but tell me any pitcher we've ever had that had nearly the variety to offer on the mound. I'll wait. I mean, my God, he had a screwball. He had a drop ball. He had a fastball. He didn't have a riser. That was really the only thing he didn't have. But he threw everything he had at you, and I don't think he even knew what he was going to throw. Nobody knew what was going to happen as far as, like, the kind of pitches. He didn't have a formula. He had God-given talent, I think, for this game specifically. And it shows when you look at his stats. I mean, just look at this guy. I mean, let me pull it up here. We've got a guy who... Let's look at his career numbers. So we've got some, and the thing is what did I just get done, like, you know, gobbling on his knob about? It was about his pitching. Let's look at the hitting stats. Career 631 batting average. Sure, that includes 2016 where he hit 743, but 2014, the year of Drew McClanahan, Nick Capra, and all these guys, 438. He hit 438, but he got on base. He was not a power hitter like he turned into later. He only hit 5 home runs that year, but career 631. He had 12 doubles, 3 triples. No one hits triples in this league. 79 home runs for a pitcher. And I think you can back me up on this, Greg. When you're pitching, you're not the best hitter because you're giving a lot of your energy on the mound and you're not playing at 100% at the plate, despite the fact that he played even during times where we didn't have pitching rotation restrictions and innings caps and things like that. He still hit 79 home runs, 182 RBIs. And he only struck out 26 times despite having 336 at-bats. His on-base percentage, because he walked almost 60 times as well, was .668. And a slugging percentage of 1.372. I mean, this is a guy who won Golden Slugger like twice. Silver Slugger, I think, one time. This is someone that, despite having dominance on the mound, he can hit the ball as well.
I mean, if I heard those stats over for a before a draft, number one pick, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's just how can you think of anyone else that you'd want on your team number one? And then, obviously, let's look at his pitching stats. He had a 3.46 ERA, 169 innings pitched, 88 of which was from 2014. He only walked 75 batters despite all that. Struck out almost 200 batters, 184 batters. He had a 30-5 win-loss record. That's better than anybody, I believe. And a whip of 1.22. This guy threw the ball. You either hit it or you struck out. He only walked 75 people out of 169 innings pitched. That is amazing to me. And with a whip that low, he also didn't give up a lot of hits. So this is a guy who is good on both sides of the field. He was a team leader, a team captain. He had a lot of pressure on him pretty much after 2014 every year he played, and he delivered. I mean, it's just, in 2015, arguably a year where we had just as good a pitching, he hit 702 and 19 home runs compared to 2014 when he had 438 and 5 home runs. 3 feet is part of that, but also he figured the game out. He got better from there.
I mean, it was pretty obvious when we came into this voting and – I think he was at the top of everyone's list.
Yeah.
And if you didn't vote for Jeremy, your name was probably Jeremy because we wouldn't let you vote for yourself. So,
and not just that, but I mean, he joined our organizing committee, I believe, in 2017 as well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's just someone that had the league, league's interest at heart. And he's just somebody who, put the league first. He did play for more or less the same team almost his entire career. But, at the end of the day, he put the league first. And I can't say that about every star player.
I mean, honestly, if it came down to it, I think he would have played with anyone. The problem was that guys wanted to play with him.
Yeah, and he played with me.
It wasn't that he wanted to play with them.
I can definitely back up that statement that you just had of, he'll play with anyone. He played with me. So if you play with me, you'll play with anybody. So, Jeremy... well-deserved, some would say far too late of an admittance into the Hall of Fame. I think that between Drew McClanahan getting in and now Jeremy Ray, the Hall has kind of been legitimized in terms of talent. Before it was, it's just going to be the guys who started the league or they played a role in keeping the league propped up or whatever. The Weekend That Burned These Guys. But now we're talking about guys who left it out there on the field. People that watch the league from outside of our league, guys like Andrew and Jeremy are the guys they talked about. They were on the tips of their tongue, and Drew McClanahan. So it is nice to see somebody who got in there. And the vote was unanimous. The top vote getter was Jeremy, which should be obvious here. So kind of moving on, I want to talk about Andrew Westcott, which I just want to talk about how poetic it is that he was put into the Hall of Fame at the same time as Jeremy. They did everything together.
Well, we didn't want Jeremy to get lonely. We had to put his best friend up there with him.
Pretty sure they even have the same birthday. I'm not even joking. So these are guys.
They do.
They're best friends. They've done everything together. So why not get put into the Hall of Fame together? It's not a gimmick. We had 7 people or 8 people voting for this thing. So Greg and I only controlled 25% of the votes here. The number two amount of votes won was Andrew Westcott. No one else was really that close. The third and fourth place vote getters were kind of a big drop off from there. So not by the skin of his teeth and by much to his own merit, Andrew has earned a spot into the Hall of Fame here. I just want to look at his numbers as well. Cause I'm going to ask you a question, Greg, when you think Andrew Westcott, what do you think of?
Honestly, I think of Mikey Saxon striking him out behind his head.
So, I mean, when I hear the name Andrew Westcott, I think bald. After that, I think home run king.
That's the number two thought.
Yeah, clutch hitter, funny guy, team captain, good chemistry, a guy that gets a good chirp in no matter what, someone who plays for all the right reasons. I mean, that's a lot to think about, but, I know that we've just been like, wah, 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 Jeremy Ray, but... let's talk about Andrew Westcott. I mean, we got a guy who, in every right, is somebody that is just as you know, dimensional of a player as Jeremy. And he outshines everybody in one key demographic here. You know, everyone loves a long ball. We've got a guy who has hit 109 home runs. If I'm not mistaken, we've not done the career stats for everybody. But of everyone we've done so far, and I can say with confidence he's the only player, the only player who has hit triple digits. 109 is a commanding lead in that home run race for the career. And what is the undoing for a lot of players is, you know, you got guys like Mike McCoy, James Clagg, Jacob Dunkel, Roush, and some of these guys that play in the Mothman. They've not had the long careers that Westcott and Ray has had. And the fact that he's hit these home runs despite playing in two of our fast pitch years. Because, you know, what's really going to come down to is when we're looking at some of these players who started in 2016, of course they've hit a lot of dingers. Of course they did. But this is a guy who, in 2014, in the year of McClanahan, Capra, and all these guys, he hit 7 home runs and had 15 RBIs. That's modest, but that puts him in the top 25 percentile for that year. The following year, 2015, 27 home runs, 68 RBIs. And he only walked 4 more times. This is a guy that swings the bat. 1.628 slugging percentage. I mean, my God. This guy doesn't just hit the ball. He gets bases. He brings guys in, and he normally doesn't have to run to do it because it's clearing the fence. Hit 302 in 2014, jumped to 572. 572 in 2015. I believe he won Golden Slugger that year and Home Run King. 2016, should we even talk about it? Of course. But what's funny is he hit one less home run that year than he did the year prior. He hit 26 home runs and 40 RBIs. So, I mean, he did have a higher slugging percentage, though, but and a higher batting average. That was, of course, you know, 694. But this is a guy who actually does better, I think, in fast pitch competition. He didn't just pad his stats in 2016. You know, and then he played in 2017. He was a team captain. Won the championship. He won his first championship because these 3 prior years he was a runner-up. He won his first championship without Jeremy Ray, Greg, and still batted 548.
Honestly, I think 2017, a lot of people have made the argument, why not Ryan Pritt instead of Andrew?
Yeah.
Longevity of career is one thing. The 2017 winning the championship, that was a year where we had a draft, so you didn't just get to play with the best guys.
Right. You played with whoever the team was. So, I mean, you're playing with guys.
Pick that team.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that what could have been for that draft, which I think could be a fun article, but Saved by the Ball's drafted well. And that shows that he's not just a good player, he's a smart player and a smart leader. He's got that reptilian brain. He knows what he needs to win, and he drafted well. And no one really came close to – I know the Thunder Ducks put up a good fight, but most of our teams had trouble with attendance. They had more or less their entire team there every week, and it shows when you look at it. But I think 2017, I don't know if you'll agree with me, Greg, because I think you participated more than I did that year, so you'd be able to tell me. But I think that's a year that kind of tested people's grit. A lot of people want to talk about 2016 was a stat padding era, but I think 2017 was where if you were good – that was your time to shine. We did split formatting. There was slow pitch months and fast pitch months. So you had a chance basically all time to show what you were made of in every conceivable format we had offered at that time. And I think if you shined, that shows, you know, I think that's at least worth considering of how people performed, of how they could have performed in other eras of the league. Do you agree?
Well, yeah. Well, it's not just with the fast pitch and the pitch, but also add in, like I said, those teams were drafted. You weren't getting to play with all future Hall of Famers, or, you know, you may have had one or two Hall of Famers on there, but you didn't have the best team to win.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have Sit on My Base or In Ball or, you know, the Mothman.
Yeah, I think 2017 was the only year that we've had that skill of players had the biggest effect on games. I honestly believe that. I mean, you have situations where, you know, Whiffle hit wonders where it was sort of like the wheels fell off of that team halfway through the year, and they really struggled just to get guys there, and they really couldn't compete at the same level as a result. But I really do think that, like, well, I'm here, and we couldn't put together this, you know, stellar team like you're talking about, so it's my time to shine. Every at-bat counts. Every mound visit counts. And someone like Andrew Westcott hit .548. That's just 3 points below his career average of .551. Still hit 13 home runs, 28 RBIs, on-base percentage of .569, which is not far off his career numbers. I mean, it's just he still had a plus one, you know, 1.177 slugging percentage. And he also, a lot of people don't realize this, he won Cy Whiffle that year. He had over 10 innings pitched. The rotation rules really, innings pitched and a lot of those stats are really suspect here because in slow pitch events, pitching stats aren't kept. But he had a 1.78 whip. So he won Cy Whiffle that year. Nobody else even came close. Jeremy Ray could not hold it together there because he did not get the run support he needed. But Saved by the Balls won it all, and he did it without Jeremy Ray. And a lot of people thought he couldn't do that. So I think that's when he turned the most heads at that point. It's like this Andrew Westcott guy, he's not just a good player. He's not just a funny guy. He is a man that knows how to win, and he knows how to build a team. So he commanded a lot of respect from me after that season. But then in 2018, I played with him, and I got to see how the other half lives. .559 average, 36 home runs, his highest of a season, 80 RBIs. He only walked twice, and a 1.472 slugging percentage, .566 on base percentage. He was our number three pitcher, and he pitched 23.2 innings, had a 3-3 record, and a 2.54 whip. I wouldn't shake a stick at that, Greg. I mean, what do you think about him as a well-rounded player? Because I know he makes a lot of noise on the field, but we don't keep fielding stats. And, you know, his prowess with a bat is already known. But what are your thoughts on Andrew Westcott and his lesser-known qualities?
Yeah, I think pitching, he was kind of that secondary guy that they would go to a lot in his career. You know, of course, always overshadowed by Jeremy Ray.
Yeah.
You know, all the spotlight was on him. But he was a slouch in the times he got on the mound.
Yeah. I think he's living proof of, we always talked about, like, well, if we didn't do fast pitching, if we didn't do that, we didn't do that. You know, these players, we talked about it time and time again on podcasts, like in the late teens and early 20s episodes, about how these pitchers that we don't think about would kind of rise to prominence, and Andrew Westcott is that guy. We thought it was going to be guys like Justin Fairman and Mike McCoy and guys like this, but none of them really pitched enough to really kind of come to mind here. Andrew Westcott, I think, is the best non-fast pitch pitcher outside of guys like Jeremy Ray and maybe a couple other guys. So he's just somebody, he pitches a lot. He only got 15 Ks in 2018, but he only walked six. So, you know, that was medium pitch. That just kind of goes to show, like, if you can hit the zone and you can pick your pitches wisely and trust your fielders and have the know-how of what you got to do to get that out in the pitcher's poison and where you have to be, which he is someone that has always been an outfield and wished the pitcher would do this or do that. He had that knowledge and that high IQ of what needed to happen. So I think he is a prime example of a diverse player and somebody who is not someone you typically think of in a particular field like pitching. And when you just kind of take the force out of things and bring it to just tact, he's someone that really kind of shined at that point there. And, you know, he's something else he's not really known for. He designed logos, like, not just for Sit on My Base. He did it for Saved by the Balls. He had a hand in a lot of the NWLA team logos. He did stuff for the website. Just a really good guy with new players as well. He'd always talk to the other teams, answer questions. Real gracious guy. So, I mean, when you really think about, you know, when we were really attracting a lot of new players, you wanted someone like Andrew Westcott there. I mean, we had guys that played well, and that was always something to aspire to, but someone with the personality of, like, man, I really like that guy. He really kind of took me under his wing. He explained things. He was fun to play with. Andrew Westcott is like the number one guy I think of for that. So very deserving spot for him. And, you know, I think it's funny that he got the second spot. So runner up one last time in this case. But, you know, number two in this situation, and I'll get you into the Hall. That you'll get the gold at that point. So I think it's fitting and kind of funny, and he's got the right sense of humor to see the humor in that. And just a guy that hell of a career, one of the most tenured players in the league, and absolute dominance in certain fields here, like home runs, RBIs, hits, batting average, slugging, on base. Just a guy that you did not want to face as a pitcher, no matter what style of pitching you were doing. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about future ballots. We've got, it's widely assumed that the three guys who did not make it are probably going to be in the next ballot. So we're going to kind of expand on that and who those other players may be. It's only speculation. You know, it's not nomination time. That'll be next January or later. So let's kind of have some fun with this and throw some names on the wall and see what sticks. And this could get pretty interesting. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll hash that out. Let's do some speculation here. So we know who's in the Hall. We know who didn't make it into the Hall, and kind of talked a little bit about, you know, their prospects in the future. But I want to talk about, let's say, you know, regulation is four players on the ballot, but I think we're going to always struggle to really narrow it down to that. And let's just assume 2022 ballot has five players again. Okay, can we do that? And let's say the three that didn't make it are going to be on the ballot again, which I know that they would have my vote to get on the ballot again. So let's just say, you know, Pritt, Clark, and Stidham get on the ballot again. Who do you think the other two players would be, in your opinion? If you had to pick two that you would guess would probably make the ballot to round it out next year, who are your two guys?
Two guys I've got my own making it are Mike McCoy. I played with him for years, saw firsthand what he could do with his bat. Not as much pitching, but that was my fault. Yeah. I wouldn't let him just because I was a ball hog. That's the first name that I would slide in there in that 4 or 5 slot. And then Paul Hessen, long career, team captain, won a championship. I mean, build a team mid-season and won a championship.
Yeah.
Great all-around player. Not on the level of Jeremy Ray. But, I mean, if you were ranking him star rankings, he's 4 to 5 in all categories.
Yeah, for sure. He's top 10 all time for me. I agree. Mike McCoy, I think he's a guy. You know, we're going to start... The more this Hall continues on, Greg, I think that the more fun characters, not just good players, but funny guys, likable guys, are going to start making this list. Mike McCoy, obviously a great example of that. You know, and I can think of people like Kevin Chatton, Ronnie Canterbury, Rick Patterson, Justin Fairman, a lot of guys like that that were really fun and really good players too, but... When you first think about them, you don't think about something they did. You think about something they said that made you laugh. So there's a lot of prestige points that are probably going to come into play here later on. But I agree, Mike McCoy, you know, he's the guy that had to hit her around the world, right, in 2014. You and I both were on the same team with him. He took Drew McClanahan deep. He went like 11 games into the season without giving up a run, and then we still lost like 21-1, but that that hit like finally showed a chink in the armor there, and then he really turned it on after that and whipped us good. But he's a guy that has had some memorable hits, played on some memorable teams, and just had a really great career. He's kind of, I wouldn't say he's a sleeper pick for the ballot, but he's just somebody who's like, yeah, he's not that top echelon. But when you really start thinking about guys that are really funny, fun to play with, fun to play against, just good dudes, guys you want to hang out with, Mike McCoy's blue chip, 100%. And then, Paul Hessen, right? You said Paul Hessen. So Paul is a unique cat, but, his most memorable play is unfortunately probably a stain on his ability, but when he volleyball spiked that home run in 2016 regionals over the field from 20 feet from the fence, it was a line drive too hot to handle. That was something that he gets a lot of flack for, but we've got a guy, and I could say a lot about Paul, but I'm just going to want to highlight one thing, and it was something you kind of talked about a little bit. In 2014, the Honey Badgers basically imploded around the All-Star break. He personally rebuilt that team and took them to a ship. And I know that rubs some people the wrong way, especially that made it pretty far into the postseason. That aside, I think it's respectable that he had what it took, and he knew the tools he needed and found those tools and put together a team. Because the Honey Badgers, I think, still would have made it to the semifinals as is, despite some of their, handicaps, and shortcomings there in certain stats and demographics. But, according to the game, Ariel and Berletich didn't hit so many home runs, but, when you lose someone like Berletich, who is, just a workhorse pitcher, and, if I had to take a bet on who would hit the zone first over anybody, Josh Berletich is that guy. And Ariel Hoare is a good, on-base percentage person, and it's a difference between you getting enough runs to win the game and not in a lot of cases. So he took a team that was broken and put it back together and went all the way. And I think that's something that's probably going to be an article in the future, not to wink and hint too much here, but something that always impressed me. He already proved that he was a good player, but I saw that he was a good leader. And it's something I saw time and time again, not in his dramatic fashion, of course, but something I saw a lot throughout the rest of his career. So those are two great picks, Greg. All right, Greg, so we'll kind of go over my two picks in my fever dream state here. So I've got Brian Ball and Nick Capra. So Brian Ball, somebody that if you think elite fielder, game changer, momentum maker, someone you want on the team if you're building a fantasy team, Brian Ball's that guy. Not really a team captain or anything like that, but he's a team leader for sure.
He's very charismatic. He always knew how to make people smile, laugh. But very, very good fielder. I mean, he was an on-base guy.
Yeah.
He didn't necessarily knock in runs or put it over the fence every time, but he was almost always on the base.
Yeah.
Because if he didn't hit it in the air, he could get to the base faster than probably anyone else in the league.
I agree. He's probably the most athletic player, possibly, that we've ever had in the league. And I think it's interesting you bring up the base running. He's probably, the best base runner we've ever had in this league. And I know that's a weird thing to say because we don't do steals or anything, but base running is where the chaos element really comes into a lot of our games. It doesn't matter if it's slow pitch, fast pitch, medium pitch, tournament, right? All hell breaks loose on the base pass, Greg. So if you're hitting the ball and you're hitting for a fielder's choice, you're probably not going to get him. They're going to go for you. So, I mean, he is the fastest. He is a guy that I think you're right. Charismatic is a great way to explain someone like Brian to someone who's not met him. And if there was like a fraternity in our league, he for sure would have one. So Brian Ball, three-season player, part of the championship 2016, sit on my base team. All-around good dude, fun guy to play with, fun guy to hang out with, too. I was on his podcast a couple of times. It was a Snappy Hour, now it's Holler, which you can find them on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all these different formats. My second guy, Nick Capra. I know I'm probably going to get some shit over this because he only played like 1.5 seasons because he only played just barely the majority of the 2015 season before he moved to Maryland. I think he went to Bethesda for school. But, a guy that, man, we were talking about teams that don't have a bunch of star power and how you can shine. I think Wee Willie Wiffle, solid team, but definitely room in the atmosphere to make some noise. And I think Nick Capra was that guy. He put it all out there on the mound. And his batting stats aren't as stellar as his pitching stats, but, man, how many heartbreakers does this guy have on the mound, Greg? I mean, it's just the way that went down in the semifinals in 2014. I had them pick to make it to the championship, if I'm not mistaken, but it's just, man, this is a guy that kind of really dealt with a lot, finally got on a team that might have had what it took to defeat the breaking balls in 2015. Kind of a lot, a big X factor, Nick Capra. What do you think?
Yeah, it goes back to just not having enough support.
Yeah.
I think so. Kind of gets lost in the shuffle. Didn't have the run support. Didn't have a secondary pitcher to go to and, you know, drop off to. He got wore out or whatever. But definitely a solid pick for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's like one of those situations where, like, hey, when I was in school, if you got to 0.5 of a number, you rounded up, didn't you, baby? So, I mean, that's two, right? So, I mean, this isn't gospel. But it's just a guy I would put on there. If the math worked, that's something that could be determined by the committee at that point. But I mean, I think if he played in 2015, they may have had what it took to take Drew McClanahan down. And in 2014, he did not have a backup pitcher. You're right. So I mean, most teams kind of had an ace. I'm being liberal here in 2014. So you know, the Green Bears had me. Adam Rose was kind of the ace for Poker Night. Steven Atkins for Wiffle Ballers, Nick Capper for Wee Willie Wiffle, Drew McClanahan obviously for Breaking Balls. You had three aces basically on Honey Badgers, and then you know, you've got you know, sitting on my base that had Jeremy Ray, and you know, all these teams that kind of had, you know, an ace. They normally had a number two as well. Like I had you, I had Hankins as well. They could pitch for me. Hatfield I think pitched number two for Poker Night, but there really wasn't anybody that had kind of the same skill, not so much speed, but just the accuracy and all that stuff. Patrick Rail was kind of the unofficial number two for the team, but there wasn't innings caps. There was no pitching rotation rules in 2014, so Nick Capper got gassed a lot. He pitched a lot of 10-11 inning games and lost a lot of heartbreaker 1-0, 2-0 games, and you're 100% right, didn't have the run support, so never got a ship. We did see him play in 2018, I believe, in the very last Hallowiffle tournament. And watched him have
a blast. Yeah, he was actually on my team. Yeah,
great to see him back. He's someone that I believe was part of the draft but didn't participate in the actual season. Ryan Pritt's kind of another person that sort of fits that. I think there's probably close to 10 players that sort of fit that. They technically were on a roster, but they didn't participate. You know, someone like Nick Capra is someone I'd love to see. If we ever find our way kind of back to the field here, he's someone I know that if it's possible at all, it's someone I'd see again. Yeah, so, I mean, those are my picks and your picks, and I think it's interesting we came up with totally different guys, but I'd love to see, you know, I can't wait until we're 10 years in the future and we got like 20, 30 guys in this Hall of Fame here. We're kind of dicking around. There's no Cooperstown, you know. Everyone's got their own plaques. It's not even in one place. We don't even have – this is not even like onion level. There's no Cooperstown. So, but it's just kind of something, a memorial of – you know, epic players and contributors that have come and gone in the league.
We got a website, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a digital, you know, Hall of Fame, so it is what it is. I hope that the players that have made it in so far and been nominated have felt honored in some way, or at least apathetic about it, at worst. So, I think we're planning on getting another bout together late March, and then probably by mid-April again, having two other players into the Hall of Fame. And you know, Greg, we've kind of had our speculative five-man ballot again. If you really, you know, gun to your head, had to pick two players you think are going to be, you know, in the 2022 class, I know I'm putting you on the spot here, who you got?
We'll torture you next time.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough. If this ballot was tough this year, next year is going to be hell to vote for, because we don't even know who those two other players are going to be. I assume that Pritt, Clark, and Stidham are going to be on that ballot, and they deserve to be so. I want them all in. But, you know, patience is a virtue. Some things are good, you know, worth waiting for. So this is, I think, one of those things, because we don't really have much of a legacy, right? The tournament didn't live beyond us. Nobody took over the league. I mean, technically, Bryce Clark did, you know, Wild and Wonderful Wiffle, which is sort of like a, you know, a prodigious offshoot of our league. But we really didn't leave a footprint, you know, as far as it carrying on. There's no footprints in the sand for us. So this is our legacy, right? So what echoes in eternity in this hall? So I really hope that people at least view it with the same sense of sincerity, but not seriousness, of those that have been admitted and made it onto the ballot. I look forward to it next year as we do it. And the thing is You know, the people that vote, that make the ballot, are on the committee, and the people that vote are the committee that makes the ballot, as well as everyone that's been elected to the Hall of Fame. So it becomes more unpredictable every year. So I'm looking forward to it. This may outlive our league by decades. And I'm hoping we can play in some form here and there so that some of these players are on the bubble, like Nick Capra and other guys like that, can find their ways onto the ballot where they deserve to be. So, Greg, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, it was great being back. I hope to be on future podcasts.
For sure. I mean, especially these landmark ones. I mean, we've really kind of went away from, like, there was even a couple episodes I didn't host. You know, Jeremy Ray and Anthony Stidham did, and I was just a guest or barely involved. But the OG crew, it's you and me and Litton, we had 2/3 of it here, and I think for this particular episode, I wouldn't have it any other way. So, Greg, it's been lovely having you back, man. I haven't seen you since October. You look the same. So I can't wait to see you and a lot of the other guys again. If you haven't gotten your shots yet and you have an opportunity to do it, do it. I will say it's a motherfucker for side effects. Full disclosure, I had COVID in February of this year in 2021. I got my first shot mid-March. Did not feel well. And I just got my second shot earlier today, which is Sunday, the 18th of April, and I feel like shit. So it's worth it, though. As someone who is, I'm one of the few people I do know that have had COVID and these shots, I can say this isn't even 10% of what the real deal has to offer. Please be careful out there. I love all of you guys, and I can't wait to see you again in some form or another. I hope everyone stays healthy and safe. And if there's any other topics you guys want us to explore on the podcast, get with Greg or myself or Anthony or Jeremy. Put a bug in our ear. Let us know what you'd like us to talk about on the podcast or what kind of articles you would like for us to read. I know we're more running a nostalgia machine at this point, Greg. But, man, it's fun to do that. I always enjoyed this aspect of the league. And it is a bit of an indulgence, and I hope that everyone is patient with this indulgence. But we're hoping to have more wiffle ball cards out and fun articles sort of evaluating some things and, you know, possibly doing something this year, you know, where there's bureaucracy involved. We don't know what all it will take. So it's something we're kind of experimenting with and talking out on the committee level. So if there's something we can do this year, we may just try that. So that's pretty much as far as we are with that. So if there's any other details, we'll let you know. Otherwise, you know, I'm content with just having a good time talking with my buddies about wiffle ball. What about you, Greg?
Oh, I love anything to do with wiffle ball. It's been half my life.
Yeah, it's been too long. Even if it's in a dark alley at midnight, I'd love to, you know, hit some balls with you guys at some point here. I'm jonesing bad for this past year. It's been, I think, enough to defeat any burnout. So, but that's all we have for this episode of the Huntington Wiffle League podcast. Nothing planned for the next episode yet. Possibly something in May. Also, if you're interested in any of my particular podcasts, I've been participating on National Wiffle, which is basically the new NWLA rebranding. And they have a weekday, daily podcast that they put out every morning called The Holy Commutes, HOLEYCOMMUTES. And it's at Holy Commutes. You can get them on Twitter. You can find them on Facebook, whatever. Find them wherever on podcasts. I think they're on Podbean, but you can find them on Apple and all these things. I did an episode this past Friday, and I plan on bringing Patrick Rail back for a Redux version of a commissionary position to talk some things out. So if you want to hear some of our stuff and our bullshit on the national level, it's going to be there. But if there's anything else you want us to talk about, get at us. Let us know. We'd love to hear your perspective. Greg, any final words before we go?
Stay safe and keep listening.
We'll talk to you guys soon. Bye.